Turn, if you would, to John, the 11th chapter. John chapter 11. Of all the things the church ought to be, it ought to be real. And you better talk about the truth and not dance around subjects. This morning, probably more than even some Sundays, we'll try to do that. This morning, the text is John chapter 11. And the text of John chapter 11 introduces something that we need to talk about. This morning, I don't mean it melodramatically. I don't mean it with some kind of cheap trick from the stage. But I can tell you with honesty this morning, I am dying. I don't feel alone. I'm in a pretty good crowd. You are dying as well. Now, nobody's told me my particular diagnosis of what I'll die of yet. I don't know if it'll be cancer or car wreck or heart attack or whether just he got lost and confused and drifted off into oblivion. I don't know what it will be, but I am dying. John chapter 11 introduces the subject about death. In John chapter 11, you have the issue of Jesus has this dear friend named Lazarus who's ill, and Jesus is across the Jordan River, and they send some people to find Jesus and say, come back, because he's sick enough that if you don't do a healing, he probably could die. I mean, that's kind of the concept there. And Jesus doesn't immediately go back. In fact, Jesus waits two more days. By the time Jesus gets back, they come and meet him and say, Master, it's too late. Lazarus already died and died 4 days ago. The time it took to go find Jesus and Jesus to come back, the 4 days have gone by. In fact, he's been in the tomb 4 days. Jesus talks to Martha, and Martha said, oh, Jesus, if you'd only been here, this is a sister, if you'd only been here. And Jesus said, your brother will live again. And she says, oh, I know he'll live again in the resurrection in the last days. And Jesus must have taken Martha's shoulders, maybe reached up and took her chin, I don't know. But when he took this answer to her, it is a sweet, tender answer in which he says, no, Martha, you don't have it right. It's not that your brother will raise in the resurrection or in the last days, or he must have tenderly looked at her and said, Martha, I am the resurrection. I am the resurrection. And he who believes in me, and Jesus gives that rather classic statement in John 11. Martha goes back to get her sister and say, the master's asking for you. And so Mary comes. And when Mary comes, a similar conversation takes place. Jesus ends up being so moved that he weeps. And you know this in the text. Jesus cries. Jesus said, where have you laid him? And they take him to the tomb. And Jesus stands outside the tomb. And Jesus confronts the issue of death, and that's where we start today. The issue of the fact that I'm dying, I was told that when I was a kid, and I believed it, I guess, but I didn't have any symptoms back then. And it seemed like it was a long way away and far off. I got symptoms now of dying. I don't mind telling you, they're everywhere. It used to be, just take simple things. It used to be when I'd reach up and comb my hair, or touch my hair, I used to have fine hair. I used to have hair that had quite a bit of it and was in the places it's supposed to be. I reach up now and my hair texture is dying. My texture is, it feels like somebody took dog hair and stuck it on the side of my head. I mean, I'm going, where did this hair come from? This is not my hair. Why does it go off? I've got a steel brush out there in my workshop. It's softer than this hair is. Where did that happen? Used to be, you'd take my skin and you'd pull it out and it would snap back. You take my skin and pull it out now and you can take a stopwatch and watch as it goes in. Our kids used to laugh. I mean, it's just every family's kind of done the same thing. On the bottom of your elbow, on that skin right there, you take a child's skin and you pull it and it's like a rubber band. It goes right back. You pull it down on my wife or myself, and we flap for 2 days. I mean, it just, and you're going, where did that come from? That's not me. That's not, where did this body, and the answer is, and I'm not being facetious with this, the answer is my body is dying. Incrementally, slowly, my body's dying. It's not just my outward stuff either, with hair and skin. I used to have a memory. I had one of the best memories of anybody I can remember. I had a good memory. There was a time that my memory was almost photographic. I could see a page and let me glance at it. Let me just run my eyes down it. And for a week, I could reproduce almost exactly what was on that page. Man, I go to phone call you in the phone book now. I dial three numbers and have to look again because I can't remember the next four numbers. And the reason being is I recognize even my mind is not like it was. It's dying. Now, it may take another 40 or 50 years to go ahead and finish the act, but I am not headed anywhere except for death. This morning, the topic is on death, and I realize there's different responses. To talk about death in a crowd like this, for some, quite frankly, you are fearful. I recognize that. There are people in this audience for whom the discussion of death creates nightmares. In fact, you already have nightmares you regularly have about death. There's some of you who are in that position. There's some of you who your heart palpitates and your chest begins to pound. And to talk about death is so difficult for you. You simply want to run away from it. In fact, you're very tempted to start a coughing fit so you can walk out in the hallway and get away from this. Maybe you look at the number and act like it's your child when the number comes up on the deal and you haven't got any kids. I mean, because why? Because I don't want to deal with the topic of death. I don't like it. It bothers me. It scares me. I don't want to do it. You may well be one of those people then, if you're afraid of death, that very likely you don't go to hospitals. Somebody's at the hospital, good luck, you may send a card, but you're not going. Maybe you'll go see the new baby born, but you're not going to go intensive care area or where bad things are. You probably don't do a nursing home ministry because nursing home has the stench of death. Oh, not physically the stench of death, but you recognize something's happening here and you just stay away from it. You say it's not your gift and you're too busy or all kinds of things, but the truth is you're running from death. I suspect there's any number of those individuals here today. I'm guessing you go to very few funerals. My guess is that when you go to a funeral, you've probably gone to only two or three or four in your lifetime. You keep saying that you're too busy to go to funerals, but you're afraid of death. When you go to funerals, I bet you sit at the back, and then you dread that part where they get up and have you walk by the casket. You hate that part. You may well shoot out the back door so you don't go up front, but I've seen you come up front. Now, again, not you personally, but I've seen that person. They come up to the front with a line, but they never saw the casket. They never saw the body. They never saw the preacher. You took a hard left turn. In fact, you were absolutely making sure that you didn't have to deal with this issue. Other people are not so much afraid of death as much as they are just simply denying it. It's just the simple concept that, like a little kid going, no, 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 so they don't have to hear anything. You've seen little kids just sing to themselves really loud, so I don't have to hear this, whatever it is. I'm not going to think about it, You just deny it. Like the items you throw in the back of your closet and slam the door and say, someday I'll deal with that, but not today. And you just close it up. Bill Hybels tells a story of being on an airplane. He was reading a book, and you know how conversations start on an airplane, and the gal said, what are you reading? And he said, oh, it's a book about death and the things that happen after death. And she went, ooh, ugh, and turned her head. Bill Hybels, a Christian, he thought, oh, great opportunity, great place to start. And so he said, you don't talk about death or think about death or, you know, begin to start this conversation. And she said, oh, no, I don't think about death. I don't deal with death. I just let it be and that kind of thing. He said, you know, we're all going to die. And she answered, not today. Not today. And that's pretty much kind of the route. I'm going to go through life going, not today, not today, not today, not today. My guess is that you may be one of those individuals who's extremely destructive in the lives of people who are dealing with reality. I've watched it through the years. And you want to get up and just shake them. Someone will be in the hospital or someone will be at home convalescing and they're having to deal with the issue of death in their own life. I may die. Now, again, nobody knows, but I may die. And you watch some well-meaning friend will come in and pat their leg and, oh, you're not going to die. Oh, no, you've got far too much living to go. And it has nothing to do with the person in the bed. It has everything to do with the denial and the running from the person who simply says, I don't face and look at death. For some of you, you may well have simply made a truce with death. Here's your truce. You stay in foreign lands and you stay with old people and stay away from around me and I won't talk about you much. And so you sort of have a truce. But the trouble is, death is like an ill-mannered pup. It won't stay where you tell it to sit. Death won't stay just in the nursing homes with old people. Death won't stay away. The tsunamis will cause you to have to look and you see little children on the beach and moms and dads and school teachers. And you look at body after body after body, and no matter how much you may want to turn your eyes and not see it, you're still forced to deal with the fact death won't stay put. It won't mind its manners. I'm going to ask for a show of hands here in a second. And I everybody knows the answer, but you still need to visually see it yourself. Those of you with immediate family or dear, close, personal friends where death came to the young, would you raise your hand? You look around the audience, and almost every person raises their hand. Death is a reality, so what are we going to do with it? Some are fearful, some deny, some simply make up their own answers then. Just make up answers to make you feel good. Invent something. Doesn't matter if it's true or not, just invent something you like. One of the invented answers that's out there is the invented answer that says when you die, you cease to exist, so don't worry about it. Basically, it's the belief that says you knew nothing consciously before you were born, you won't know anything consciously after you're dead. You're a vapor or a mist, you're simply here and you're gone. Don't worry about it. It's the way. 3% of the world believes that. About 97 out of 100 people do not believe that, but about 3%. In this country, it's closer to 10, 12, 13% of the people who believe that. But internationally, it's only 3% around the world. There's a second belief. That second belief says, well, it goes like this. If death is a door, I sure hope no one walks in as I'm pointing about this behind him. If death is a door and we're all going through that door, every single person is going through that door, part of the world has a recycle mentality that basically says, as soon as you go through that door, don't worry about it because you suddenly magically pop back in those two doors. You reincarnate, you recycle. You may come back in as a Labrador pup, or you may come back in as a little boy in the Sudan or a girl in China, but you'll just come back as something. So you just are on a continual loop. And that's a belief that's out there. But by far, the majority belief, if you deal with death and you say, okay, let's talk about your death. What do you think is going to happen? 80% of the world and 80% of our country believes that death, that you open your eyes and you wake up to a new and better world. Everybody sort of believes, well, the word resurrection is a uniquely Christian concept with a uniquely Christian definition. The rest of the world has kind of grabbed it for their own imagination, and the rest of the world says there's a better world. You're like a goldfish in this life. You're in a little small aquarium bowl, and it's a nice aquarium bowl, but when you die, you get to wake up in an ocean, and you could be a shark there. You get to be big, and you get to have the best. And it doesn't really matter much who you are. As long as you have life, when you wake up, you have a better life. You can have the most drug addict, big band kind, I mean, big band, the rock band kind of person, the womanizer, absolutely living antisocial as you can get. And when that guy dies, what are they going to say at his funeral? Oh, man, he's on that stage in heaven now, isn't he? I mean, he's finally got, and they'll talk about he's in a better place playing for a bigger crowd. You can be the absolutely most immoral athlete, and when you die, they'll make some reference about now he's in his field of dreams. Now he's up in a great, big, wonderful place, and everybody gets that sticker. As a Christian, you talk about the resurrection as if it's something marvelous and wonderful that the Christian message has, and the rest of the world kind of yawns because they've already adopted it for their own anyhow. You just say it comes this way. We say it happens to everybody. And so the rest of the world basically says, I'm going to find my rest in death by just believing I wake up in a better place. What is the truth? John chapter 11 is one of the key passages you would begin to work out of to find the truth. Chapter 11 is an eyewitness account of the day Jesus addressed death. In John chapter 11, I would find the beginning of this conversation. I want to say to you, this will be inadequate. I will look at my watch here in a little bit and quit and go to the other end. And the topic will not be covered well enough. We'll get a start on it. If you are struggling with the concept of death today, please don't be stupid and ignore it. If you want to study with an elder or a minister, a Bible school teacher, just a Christian who wants to study with you, please say to someone, I don't think I have a good handle on this. I don't think I know what the truth is about death. We would love to study with you. Do not go home that you don't raise a red flag to somebody and say, I could use help with this. I know that I won't answer all the questions. I'll get a start on it this morning. Do not leave here with wrong answers or wounding answers. We'd love to study with you. We make that offer. Let me make four or five observations related to this raising up of Lazarus, which you need to read, by the way. You need to spend time today reading John 11 if you've not already done so. The first observation I would make is that, not a pleasant one, but it's an observation, you're going to die. Just start with that one. You're going to die. I guess if I have you look backwards, you recognize that going to first grade was something you could never imagine. It kind of snuck up on you, but one day you went to first grade. Those of you that are a little bit older, you when you were 10, 11, 12, you could never imagine being 16 years old and driving. But one day it sort of snuck up on you and they were handing you a license to drive, and you were that age. Some of you a little older, different situation. You could never imagine really the day that somebody would hand you a baby at the hospital and you'd walk home going, I'm a father, I'm a mother. I don't know how to do this. But lo and behold, it there was. All of those days kind of just slipped up on you and you were kind of shocked the day they happened. The day of my death will slip up on me the same way. There'll be a hearse that backs up to pick me up one of these days. It's also got its motor running for you. The day of your death is certain. The only reason you will not die is if the Lord will happen to come back and split the sky and end everything that we know as life. But if that doesn't happen, you're going to die. You need to have conversations with your spouse. You need to talk honestly with your children. Let's not play this silly game of trying to act like it's not here. You can run all you want to, but it won't go away. I watched a little video on TV. I think it was on one of the news channels, kind of those human interests, but there's a little 3 or 4 or 5-year-old boy out on a patio running away from his shadow, trying to get away from it. And everywhere he went, it was still behind him. And sometimes it even seemed closer to him and he couldn't get away. Don't run from the reality. You are going to die. I think that Psalm 90 probably has something to say. Psalm 90 says that the mark of wisdom to be able to number your days. Now, you don't know what the number of your days are. I understand that. But your days are numbered. They're not limitless. Every woman here has in her billfold a number. Maybe that number is 40 years and 1 month. Maybe that number is 70 years and 2 months. Maybe that number is 16 years and 3 months. Every woman here has it. Maybe it's 8 years and 1 month. You can't see your own number, but it's there. Every man in his billfold has a number. Maybe it's 50 years and 10 months, or any number of combinations. But I do not have a limitless supply of days. I recognize that this morning, I don't know who our attendance will be. It looks like we're a little bit down this morning, but there'll be around 1,900 people here today between last night and this morning. Out of 1,900 people, folks, some of us are going home this week. Some of us will go out that door. We're all headed out at somewhere, but somebody's going out this week. For some of you, today's sermon will be the last sermon you ever hear. Wish there were a better one. But this is the last one. Death is absolutely inevitable. The second observation. Death has a sorrowful element. Don't let anybody ever put just sort of this smiley face sticker suddenly and throwing it on death and say everything is all high fives and, you know, celebration and all those things. No, we'll get to that in a little bit, but let me start with this one. Death has a sorrowful element. When you start back in the book of Genesis, God made the Garden of Eden and death wasn't there. Death wasn't invited. Death was a Johnny come lately. It wasn't until Eve decided, no, I can live my life without my God. I can live outside of His will. And death showed up. Eve and Adam and sin brought death. That would have been painfully obvious to Eve. I'm guessing Eve was a gorgeous young woman. I'm guessing she was a knockout. My guess is that she began to watch her own skin turn old. I'm guessing she became a gray-haired old woman. I'm guessing the day she buried her own son, that her shoulders would have shook because of what sin brought in this world. Sin brought death. In John chapter 11, I want you to notice Jesus has a response that's pretty emotional to Lazarus' death. Now, He knows He's going to raise him from the dead. But even here, the painful element of death, Jesus acknowledges. Look at John 11, 33. When Jesus saw her, talking about Mary, when Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, He was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. That's basically a euphemism for His shoulders shook and He sobbed. Now, again, I don't know how visible it was. Jesus is brokenhearted. You come on down to verse 35, and Jesus wept. And then you come down to verse 38, and Jesus once more, deeply moved, came to the tomb. Three times in a set of verses, 33, 35, and 38, it talks about Jesus brokenhearted. There are things about death that are just sad. Now, it's a sadness that the Lord can overcome, but they're still sad. Mark Gardner should have been able to raise his children. He never even got to see Hope's face. Dick Gibson should have been able to walk his daughters down the aisle, but he didn't. Lori should have been able to bring her baby home from the hospital, but she didn't. The Bolans ought to have two grandchildren. They have one. Jeff should have been able to watch his little boy turn eight, but his little boy never made it to eight. There are sorrowful things in death. 1 Corinthians 15, death is not described as some old friend. Please know that. The Bible does not describe death as some old, neat old friend that shows up. 1 Corinthians 15, death is described as the last enemy. Sin is the enemy my whole life. I will struggle against sin my whole life and try to beat it back by the righteousness of God. But in my physical body, death still is the last enemy that this old body will have to deal with as I deal with sin. And Jesus describes, Paul describes what Jesus did, that He defeated the last enemy. So we have a defeated enemy, but let's make no mistake about it, it's still an enemy. Yes, there are sad things in death. Now, if that's all we knew, we're in bad shape. But death is inevitable, and death has sorrowful elements. There's a third observation you need to make, and that is death is never yet considered in the Bible the worst thing. Turn, if you would, to Matthew chapter 10. You see, the Bible never tells me to fear death. Death is basically nothing more than the mask that covers up the real issue. Death is the sort of the facade. I'm never told to fear death. In Matthew chapter 10, verse 28, Jesus uses this profound concept to put your hands around. He's sending out the 12 and 2s, and He tells them all kinds of things. But here's what He says in verse 28. Do not be afraid of those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Don't worry too much about death. Yes, it's your enemy, but don't worry too much about it. Don't even worry too much about your murderer. Don't worry about your body and death. Rather, be afraid of the one who can destroy both soul and body in hell. And the word destroy is actually the word ruin. Don't be afraid of death. I'll tell you what you can be afraid of. You be afraid of the one who can ruin both soul and body in hell. What's that basically mean? It means that there's something behind death that is much worse than death if you do not understand it. Jesus would say, do not be afraid of death. There's something more significant you need to think about. The Bible never even talks in terms about the person who dodged death the longest as if they're the winner. The Bible doesn't seem to congratulate that 90-year-old man that somehow he successfully did something in life better than the 20-year-old man did. The 20-year-old man may well die and the angels in heaven applaud and Christ stand and receive, and a 90-year-old man may die and heaven weeps. Dodging death the longest has no particular award. It's not how long you live, it's how you live. No, the truth is, Jesus said this. He said, wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction. Many there are that find it. And narrow is the gate. Narrow is the way that leads to life and few there are that find it. And death reveals which road I've lived my whole life. Death is the great revealer of where I am. Death will reveal what my body has hidden, so to speak, will be revealed in the judgment that follows. So behind that door, for lack of a better term, it's not that my body has to die, that's the painful thing. It's behind that door that my life will be revealed. For whether or not I bowed my knee to a creator or whether I stayed a rebel in my independent heart the rest of my life. That sense is why we would say death is not considered the worst thing. The fourth observation I would make is death will always reveal who Jesus is. So in John chapter 11, Jesus stands weeping outside the tomb. And after he wipes his tears off, he says, roll back the stone. And they said, oh, no, don't roll back the stone. Please don't wreck the stone. That's Martha's request. My brother's already decaying. There will already be a stench. Please don't roll back the stone. And Jesus said, roll back the stone. I'm guessing the crowd even took a step back. I'm guessing the stench of a four-day-old body even rolled out of the tomb. And then it says, and Jesus said, Father, I thank you that you hear me. I know that you always hear me. But I say it on behalf of these who watch. Thank you, Lord, you hear me. And he cried out with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. You want to know why Peter was willing to die as a martyr? Because Peter stood there the day that Jesus cried out, Lazarus, come forth. You want to know why James would die as a martyr and not renounce the name of Christ and let him cut his own head off? And the answer is because James stood there that day that Jesus cried out to a corpse in a tomb. You want to know why John would spend his entire life pointing out Christ? The answer is John stood there the day that Lazarus came out. For while death is my enemy, Jesus demonstrated that he is the resurrection. And what's behind that door? What's behind that door is not a place or a thing or an event. What's behind the door is Jesus said, I am the resurrection. I have no illusions. Julie and I probably will not have our heartbeats stop the same day. Julie or I, one of the two of us, will say goodbye to each other. We may get a formal chance to say goodbye. We may not get the formal chance. I don't know what it will be. And one of us will tuck the other one in to something and sort of slide them through that door. And the question on what's on the other side of the door was settled that day in John chapter 11. Jesus, the resurrection. That hope about Jesus, the resurrection, that is what has dried up your grandparents' tears. That's what's mended broken hearts. Yes, death has some painful things in it. But death was defeated by the resurrection. And Christ, the resurrector, is behind that door. See, the question is not so much what you believe about death. The question is, what do you believe about Jesus? Is Jesus your friend? Anybody who says all religions lead to heaven, they're wrong. They're wrong. It's not like we can blaze any trail we want to heaven's gates. It's like God Himself came the other direction and blazed a trail out of heaven's gates down to death's door. And there He stood and He said, come to me. Come to me. And what you do with Jesus. You know, I actually will tell you, I like the life I have now. But death is a bit of an adventure. For it'll be His face I see. And His voice I hear. And my decaying old sagging flesh shall get restored in a new and different way. My old bristly, wiry hair. And my mind, my heart restored. The resurrection in Jesus Christ. We have a lady in the congregation. I don't know if she's sitting here today or not. She wakes up in the morning in the nursing home, and every morning she wakes up, she says, shucks. Because there's a grand adventure in Christ who raises the dead.